I could like wear a boa. You could call me Dick Eisen or something like that. I could come up with a persona.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
And dangerous Dick Eisen.
What do you, you know, what do you think? I'm shooting my shot. I'm going YOLO right here with Stephanie McMahon.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
You do sound like my 14-year-old daughter, though, YOLO.
Earlier on the show, from AMC's Better Call Saul, actor Giancarlo Esposito, Ravens head coach John Harbaugh. Still to come, Nebraska offensive lineman Cam Jurgens. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. So much to talk about in this third hour as Tiger Woods is beginning his second round at Augusta National. He bogeyed the first hole. Is that what he did, Chris?
Yeah, bogeyed.
All right, he's back to even par. The cut line is going to be either three or four over par. So it's a windy day there, though. And no one's running in hiding, which is good news if you want to see Tiger top 10, top five by the end of the day. But also bad news because the wind is picking up. So we'll keep an eye on that over the last hour of this program. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk will be joining us shortly on the program for some top stories going on. Deebo Samuel is the latest player to expunge his social media accounts of any hint or sign of who he plays for. Apparently the 49ers and he are, at odds. Although there is one photograph on his Instagram page with him in a 49er uniform. It's the one to announce that he was first team all pro. So his messages are everywhere. We'll talk about some of that stuff with Mike Florio. We already had John Harbaugh of the Ravens and the actor Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Gus Fring in the upcoming final season of Better Call Saul. He was here in person in hour number one. You miss anything, please. Our YouTube stream is sitting right there for you. YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show. I enjoyed watching him work out at the combine, and then the stories surrounding him caused me to just say, let's get him on, and you've got to have on a guy whose nickname is Beef, because his last name is Jurgens, and he's Beef Jurgi of Nebraska, born and raised in Nebraska, played for his hometown Nebraska Cornhuskers, and he's one of the top linemen available in the draft, if not the top center available in the draft, coming up later on this month. He is Cam Jurgens. How are you, Cam?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing fine. Did I get that entire introduction correct? Is anything off on that, Cam?
Oh, sounds great. Sounds great.
Okay. How'd you walk me through how you got the nickname of Beef, Cam? Go for it.
Pretty much when I got to Nebraska, I kind of had a lot of nicknames growing up. When I got here, I guess during NIL, they started doing like a branding series. And basically they asked like, hey, we want to make a logo for you and do some stuff. And like, hey, what nicknames, like, do you want a nickname or slogan? I'm like, shoot, everybody calls me Beef Jerky, you know? So I did that and kind of grew up on a cattle farm. So it makes sense. So I loved it.
Okay. And is it true, Cam, that you have your own line of beef jerky called Beef Jerky? Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. So during NIL, I started making some stuff, and a bunch of local lockers reached out, sent me jerky, and I started, working with them, and I got my own Beef Jerky jerky.
Mm. When you say you work with them, you're talking about sampling the product, making sure it tastes appropriate to put your nickname on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. What does it taste like? What do you got for me, Cam?
It's good. You'll have to check it out. We'll send some in, but I'm selling it on beefjerky.com.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good so far. I'm trying to, starting small, building up, and it's just something fun to do. Oh. I kind of grew up, we deer hunted, and we'd make our own jerky from that, so it's always something that's been really, interesting to me.
Yeah, it says distributed by Cam Jurgens. I see the packaging right there. Okay, Beef Jerky. So do you want to, take this on Shark Tank or something like that, Cam? Would you do that?
We'll see where it goes.
Come on, man.
I'm not sure, but, I'd love to expand and get bigger. But right now it's just kind of selling it online and then small local places in around the area in Nebraska.
Okay. Well, you don't have to send any to me. You're not yet a professional. I can't. Normally I get into this business to get free stuff. Certainly not just for me, but for my guys here. Where can people get your product?
Where can people get it? I got a website, beefjerky.com.
BeefJurgy.com, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's. I had a teammate last year, Matt Tichtman. He kind of helped set up a website with me, and it's kind of been a fun project for us.
I love it.
Okay. Rich, he's got a limited time offer, 5 packs for $35.
Wow.
At BeefJurgy.com.
Okay. I'm not really a consumer of beef jerky a lot. Is that that's a good deal?
That's a good deal. That's a real good deal.
That's a real good deal.
Real good deal.
Cam?
Yeah, it's a great deal.
Come on, sell me on it, man.
You don't have to be a consumer of beef jerky to enjoy it, because it's a really good product. So I think you know if you try it out, people will enjoy it.
He's got all kinds of merch, Rich. Sweatshirts, polos, hats. He's got a beer koozie. Got the full package.
So
yeah, I tell you, Nebraska fans are crazy. There's people all over the state, all over the country, and when the Husker players, make their own line, it's really cool seeing the support. A lot of people bought stuff during the year, and all over the country, it's pretty unique with a Nebraska fan base.
Okay, academic All-American. So did you take marketing? Did you take economics or business, anything at Nebraska?
No, I'm actually an exercise nutrition science major. So I'm kind of learning as we go when we, went through this process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let's talk about your game. The word nasty comes up a lot. Do you hear that a lot in terms of your game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's hard to be a good old lineman if you don't have a little grit and you don't have a little edge to you. So I think that's something I really pride myself in. And, I'm trying to be the toughest guy on the field every time I step out there.
Okay. How many people did you piss off over this entire period when you're playing and against fellow prospects and things like that during that this
I'd say probably too much to worry about.
Too much to worry about. Okay.
I love that.
What's the number by which you pass that that fault line of no longer caring about how many people you've pissed off?
I don't know. I don't think you got to. I mean, football, you can't care about people you piss off. I mean, it's kind of the job of O-lineman. You got to, get dirty. You got to be in the trenches there, and you don't get no love, no glory. But that's kind of the job for us, and it kind of fits my mold.
I think, didn't you piss off a ton of people at the Senior Bowl, Cam? Did I see some video of...
So I didn't go to the Senior Bowl, yeah. I was I'm an underclassman, so I wasn't allowed there.
So that was somebody else that I saw. Okay, and so when you actually get into it, though, what is your sense when it's your job to protect, when it's your job to make sure the play is handled appropriately pre-snap? Walk me through that for you, Cam.
Yeah, especially the center position, you're asked a lot. You got to make sure, you're confident in what you're doing. You're calling the plays or protections. You're setting the point, whatever the play is. And you got to make sure you're setting the tone because, the guys around us in the O-line, I got to make sure I'm doing my job so they have confidence in me when I'm making my points, when I'm making my calls. And at the end of the day, we're making sure no one touches our quarterback. That's our guy back there. So got to keep him clean. And in the run game, pass game, it's all the same. You got to, you're trying to put guys on the ground. You're trying to, set the tone, because that's kind of where the game's won and lost a lot of times.
Is it true you already met with the Broncos? You took a visit there, Cam?
Yeah, I just took a top 30 visit there a few days ago.
Okay. So what did you glean from that? Did you meet Coach Hackett? Who else? Walk me through your process there, Cam.
Yeah, I got to meet everybody there, and it was really cool meeting all the new coaches. Coach Hackett's got a lot of energy. I love meeting with him and the OC and Coach Barry. Like, it was a really cool time. Those top 30 visits are fun, but it's just kind of in and out. It's real quick.
So what's the craziest question you've been asked during this entire process, this entire talent evaluation season, Cam Juergens?
I don't know if I'd have any, crazy questions, I guess. I had a pretty long handshake with Coach Vrabel when I first met him, walking in, questioning me, and it was just like who can squeeze each other's hand harder for like a minute straight, just staring at each other. So that was a nice little fun introduction into that meeting. But otherwise, not any like super crazy questions, but it's kind of been all fun during this process, meeting all the coaches and getting to see people. It's been really eye-opening. You know, I think the coolest part was, like, I went into the Dolphins, and I see Dan Marino in there. I'm like, man, that's pretty cool.
Now, did you know him from football or Ace Ventura, Pet Detective? Let's be honest, Cam. Come on now.
Football.
Oh, okay. All right, you're a football guy. That didn't make it to the cow farm? Ace Ventura didn't make it to the cow farm in Nebraska? You didn't see that there?
No. No, it didn't.
Okay. You got to see it. You'll love it. Okay, so let me get back to the Vrabel thing. I just had him on yesterday. I wish I'd known this before he was here. What are you talking about? Like, you sensed he was testing you for how long you were going to grip and squeeze?
Yeah, I guess. I think you can, you know, you can sense a lot from a man with how he shakes someone's hand.
Right, look him right in the eye. Look him right in the eye.
Yeah,
right.
you got to be formal, and you got to look him in the eye. You got to give a firm grip, for sure.
And so at one point you thought, he's not letting go of my hand, I need to do something about this? Like, you didn't, like, walk me through that. What do you mean?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, you got to make sure you're shaking your hand longer than the other guy is. It's kind of like a test, you know, who's going to stop shaking their hand first.
Okay. All right. I'd love to see you play for Tennessee then and see how that goes, you know.
I would love that.
I bet. So what are you doing draft night? What's draft night for you like, Cam?
I'm just going to have it at the house back in my hometown, you know, small family get together. We'll see. I feel like it's, you know, that's a stressful situation. You want to have people that get everybody around there, but you don't want it too big.
Are you catering? You catering yourself? You going to have your product out there on draft night?
Yeah, we'll have some jerky there. You know, my brother, he's actually got he's got a food truck. He has a really good barbecue food truck, so he's going to be making food for us that night.
All right. Have you been on Will Compton's pod yet? Have you done that?
No, I haven't. I need to. They came to Nebraska for one of our games last year, so I got to get on the bus. But I didn't do a podcast with them. But yeah, that's a fun podcast to listen to.
Well, if you go to Tennessee, I mean, that's it. I mean, that would be it. I mean, that you'd have to be on the bus there for sure.
Yeah, I feel like if I get drafted there, I'm making it on the pod for sure.
I can't believe I beat Will Compton to the punch in having a Nebraska Cornhusker top prospect in the draft on a program. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. We got to get after him about that one. Sure.
You know what? I just think we should just let it sit out there and see how it marinates. You know, we can do that. All right, Cam, thank you for the call. Good luck to you. Let's do this when you land somewhere. Let's talk. Let's talk a little
Sounds
bit more.
Good. Look forward to it.
Congratulations on everything that happened at Nebraska and on your growing beef jerky business and beyond. I look forward to seeing where you land on draft night.
Thank you. You guys have a good one.
You got it. That's Cam Juergens, everybody. Nebraska Cornhusker center. You saw what Creed Humphrey did coming out of the heartland of this country, anchoring that line in Kansas City. Maybe that's the kid who can do it for some team in the NFL. Damn it. I wish I'd known this about Vrabel before yesterday. Do you think he does that with every prospect? Big lineman.
I have to think.
Just to stand, because he's big. He's huge.
He's a big guy.
You know,
I think he does it with everyone. It seems like that's just a kid's move. Like, I'm going to hold this handshake a little extra longer just to see if you let go first.
I kind of feel like we had a situation like that yesterday, Vrabel.
A virtual handshake?
Well, I mean, because, you know, I set up my questions sometimes with a long preamble, with a big windup, with a Luis Tiant kind of
big
huge El Duque, lots of motion windup, because I want to make sure that my question is placed in proper context. And it wasn't fast enough for him.
He's Rob Manfred. Let's speed this up.
It was the moment where I was trying to set up how the narrative that we're talking about, that the AFC has been so, you know, in the news with the number of people that are coming in, right? Like Russell Wilson. The AFC has gotten extremely tough.
Fact.
It's been more, let's put it this way. March 31st. The AFC was much tougher than it was on March 1st, okay? And on January 1st, they were the number one seed in the AFC. Yeah. So that I just wanted to ask him about, you know, his thoughts on the Titans maybe having their hands more full. And this would happen. And the other two narratives about your team, or at least your team is associated with, is the fact of Russell Wilson is now
right here. He's tired of me.
conference, and Matt Ryan is now in the conference.
You know, going, and taking my time.
You also have Deshaun Watson returning to the conference, and the American.
Yeah, trying to figure out how that narrative affects the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, well, the narrative is that you were the first overall seed, and the conference just got even more difficult.
It's the National Football League. It's hard. We played however many teams, eight or nine teams that made the playoffs last year and beat however many of them. It's going to be the same next year. You know, it's everybody's got $220 million to spend, and it's going to be great players on every team. That's why this game is great. That's why this league is great. That's why everybody loves it. 18 teams have a chance to make the playoffs, or how many did last year? 20-some teams. 56 games within the last 2 minutes are decided. 31 on the last play. Like, take your heart pills and buckle up.
There it is. I wrote that down, too. Take your heart pills and buckle up.
Well, I guess we cut off where I kind of felt like I pushed back. I said to him, like, am I on a pitch clock with you? Like, got a good answer, though.
Yeah, it's good.
I love it. He's a football coach. He's a football coach. He's a football coach. Take your heart pills and let's go. Buckle up. Buckle up, Buttercup. I don't care about Russ. I don't care about Matt Ryan. I don't care about Deshaun coming in. I don't care about how deep the AFC West is. I'm in the AFC South. I play football. What do you do for a living? You ask long-winded questions.
Are you taking heart pills in your 20s?
No. Love it. I feel like he was shaking my hand and staring me down and just saying, like, I dare you to let go first.
Yeah. Just holding it. Like, you or me. You, me.
Am I taking it too personal?
No.
No,
I think hard time to figure out what this has to do with the Tennessee Titans. Just busting my stones.
Well, you just kept going with quarterback, like Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan, and you're like, Deshaun Watson's still here, like he didn't go anywhere.
I think he was just like, what's the point of this? Where are we going? What's going on?
I'm a linebacker, Rich. I caught touchdowns. I caught touchdowns from Tom Brady in the Super Bowl when you were doing top 10 highlights with Stuart Scott.
Mike Vrabel.
What were you doing?
Eight career receptions, eight career touchdowns.
He's like Chris Carter.
Even more
He's more efficient than Chris Carter.
Even more so.
I mean, he literally only catches touchdowns. Literally, comma, an actual
in
fact.
The Super Bowl.
Because a lot of people misuse the word literally a lot, but this is literally, that's all he does.
Hey, by the way, sitting there 26th overall, Cam Jurgens is available.
Done.
That might work,
sign,
right?
Sealed, delivered.
Again, I'm not terribly familiar with their offensive line situation, but...
Well, it must be good because Derrick Henry gets a lot of yards.
Yes, he does. Callaway didn't just create their longest irons ever with the new Rogue ST. They made their longest irons ever perform at the highest level for every player. Because these Rogue ST irons come in four different offerings. Been telling you about this. The only irons ever to do so using artificial intelligence on high-strength 450 steel. Most popular iron of the bunch is the Rogue ST Max, designed for the widest range of players because of its refined game improvement shaping and incredible combination of speed, forgiveness, and all-around performance. If you're a low to mid-single-digit handicappers, you listen up. Rogue ST Progs is going to give you that hollow body construction and sleek, compact player shape. The best game improvement model is the Max OS. Mid to high handicappers, you get total forgiveness with high launch wide soles and enhanced offset. Yes, please. There's also a Max OS Lite, the most forgiving high launch iron. No other irons perform like the new Rogue ST irons. Find your Rogue ST irons at CallawayGolf.com/GoRogue. Mike Florio, when we come back, let's talk more football, folks. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. Mike Florio back here on the show. How you doing, Mike?
Rich, I'm doing great, pal. Fun fact about John Harbaugh. He is 59 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Knoll was 59 when he retired from the Steelers, mm-hmm. never to be heard from again in the NFL. It's amazing how 30 years has changed the overall fitness, capacity, and willingness of these guys to keep going. Because I think Harbaugh's going for another 20 years.
Me too. He's so terrific with the media. He's terrific at the job. And at one point, I even pointed out to him, you know, he's smart, man. And I didn't point out to him saying, boy, you're a smart guy. But the way I brought it up is like, he's the guy who, you know, in the middle of a season is like, okay, Joe's not working out anymore. We're going to go with Lamar and we're going to change our entire damn playbook. And we are going to be all in on the guy. We're not going to fit, you know, him into what we like to do. We're just going to do what he likes to do and go for it. And you don't see that very often, you know. You don't ever
and
see
that's the best kind of coaching. You take the players that you have, and you do what they do well. You don't do the things they don't do well, and that's how you maximize your team. And, you know, it's going to change all the time, especially in today's NFL, where your roster is going to change dramatically. You're going to have to change some of your approaches based upon who your players are every single year.
He was, and again, he volunteered. He did not like the new overtime rule and wanted the Ravens to vote against it, and they didn't. He doesn't like it. And
what does he like about it?
Because I brought up the fact that he doesn't think it's going to change anything. You know that he thinks most people are going to take the ball first anyway, because even if both teams score the same number of points and overtime continues, you want to have a second possession, and you want to have the first possession of sudden death. I pointed out that what you know, the benefits of getting it second is you would go for it fourth down an eight from your own 20 because you know you have to, as opposed to the team that gets it first. That's a distinct advantage.
Exactly.
He goes, that's exactly why I don't like it. That's why I wanted to vote against it. He just thought, like, how long are you going to keep extending overtime is basically what his point was.
Well, but the reality is each team gets a possession and then it goes to sudden death. And I think that when you consider how things would have gone in that Chiefs-Bills game, where it had gotten to the point where it was worse than even the most high-powered video game. The offense is just up and down the field. The number of points that they scored in the final 5 minutes of the game, whoever got the ball first in overtime was going to score a touchdown, and whoever got the ball second in overtime was going to score a touchdown. And what would be fascinating is if the team that scores first kicks the single extra point, and then the team that scores second has to decide, do we go for two here and pin the season on converting this play, or do we kick the extra point, assume you make it because it's not as automatic as it used to be, and then allow it to become sudden death? So I just think it adds layers and levels of intrigue, and it makes it more fair. It was too much, in my opinion, hinging on the outcome of a coin toss. And I think some teams will choose to kick off. And I think that we will see a team maybe consider rolling the dice with a surprise onside kick if they know that the other team is going to score a touchdown anyway on that opening drive, and then we get a chance to match it. We're going to run the numbers, and it's a 15% chance now to recover an onside kick when they know it's coming. If you pull off a great surprise, your chance of recovering the onside kick is a lot higher than that. I think we're going to see those strategies possibly play out at some point. Now, the other side of it, too, now that they've changed this rule, we're not going to have an overtime game in the postseason for like 15 years.
That's right.
But so, and there aren't going to be many of these that happen, so it's going to take a decade probably to get enough data points to see how it all plays out. But I'm fascinated by all the different strategies that now come into play, and I like the idea that each team is going to get a crack at getting the ball.
Well, I mean, I asked Harbaugh exactly the question that you wrote your post about this morning that I saw about onside kicking to get the ball first and go with an onside kick. Certainly, if you know you have most, you know, you have a second possession in your back pocket, a possession that you're going to have in your back pocket. And he said essentially, yeah, he used a 10% chance of getting one correct. And he's like, if you think that, like, say he used the example, the Mahomes Josh Allen game, he goes, if you think that you don't have really much of a chance to stop the other team because they're just on such a roll offensively, and you think it's 100% chance your opponent's going to score, why not take that 10% chance that you get the ball back? It's 90% chance that you lose is better than 100% chance you lose. And that's exactly what he said.
And I really, you know, do think it's higher than 10, because we wrote something a few weeks ago about the USFL using the 4th-and-13 alternative to the onside kick, and the adjustment that the NFL made last year to the formation for the kickoff aimed at increasing the percent recovery of the onside kick. It actually did move the percentage from 4 to 15, and that's when you know it's coming. So I really do think you get a better than 15% chance if you don't know it's coming, if you execute it well. Maybe if you see something on film about the way the guys drop back on the kickoff, you get somebody who may be half, you know, not paying attention at the time. There's, you know, it's the Sean Payton thing from Super Bowl 44. If somebody unfurls that at the right moment, it's then you get the ball, and all you got to do is go kick a field goal and you win.
Mike Florio, PFT Live host, author of Playmakers, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Simple question. What's up with Debo? What's happening there?
Well, when you strip everything related to your team from your social media page at a time when every other receiver that is eligible for a contract is getting a contract, other than DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown, but there's at least some rumbling that Metcalf is going to get paid by somebody and the Titans want to keep Brown. This Debo Samuel contract situation has been so overlooked, it rarely gets mentioned, and this is a guy who's a combination receiver and running back, and it makes it even more urgent, in my view, for him to get his financial reward. He's got a greater physical risk every time he plays because of the way they now use him, and he's going to have a shorter career, quite possibly, if they continue to use him like a running back. So now's the time for him to take a stand. Now's the time for him to try to get paid. And they're carrying around $25 million in cap space for Jimmy Garoppolo as they wait to decide what to do with him. If they would just move on from Garoppolo, they'd have more than enough cap space to get Debo Samuel and Nick Bosa taken care of. I mean, they got a problem with those two guys. Bosa's going to want $30 million a year. Debo's going to want $27, $28 million a year. And both guys deserve it. This is one of the byproducts of having great players. They deserve to get paid, and as we see the receiver market mushroom at the top, it's just a matter of time before Debo gets his. And if I were him, I'm not doing anything. I'm not setting foot on a field anywhere until I get my contract. Now, maybe we'll see him hold in like T.J. Watt did last year, show up, be at meetings, work out, but just not put himself at risk of any kind until he gets paid. And obviously it worked for T.J. Watt and for the Steelers. He showed no ill effects of not being involved in training camp or the preseason. He went on to have a defensive player of the year type effort.
So Garoppolo getting shoulder surgery and potentially removing his chess piece from the craziest ass chessboard in the history of the NFL of March 2022 has a ripple effect with two guys who want to get paid, and that may be leading to whatever's going on. To take photographs off of Debo's social media? Is that essentially the dots being connected here?
That may very well have something to do with it. The 49ers currently have less than $2 million in cap space. Now, look, if you want to create cap space, it isn't all that hard to do it. You can take other contracts. You can move money around. You can kick the can into future years. But when you've got an easy $25 million, then you can instantly clear if you move on from Jimmy G. And I don't know whether or not they're just slow playing this because they think there's going to be a Teddy Bridgewater catastrophic knee injury that all of a sudden creates a market for Jimmy G when one isn't there. He's got $25 million plus due. He's got 1 year on his contract. I don't know who's going to give up anything of value for him without a restructured or extended contract, and he's got no incentive to do it. So, yeah, the moment they move on from Jimmy G, they got a lot more cap space available for these guys they got to keep. And I can't help but wonder, Rich, at some level, whether there are people in the 49ers organization who just may be concerned Trey Lance isn't ready. And I hear those whispers from time to time, not nearly enough to make a big deal about it. But you can have a split of opinion in the organization as to whether or not Lance needs another year on the bench. And then it's about spending the $25 million, not just keeping it on the books until Labor Day weekend, but keeping it all the way through the season and giving Jimmy G one more year while Trey Lance continues to get ready.
Well, but not at the yes, you got to pay two of your top players. I mean, they got to get paid.
You got a problem.
You know what I mean, like,
if you do that, you got a problem.
Last year it was fine. I mean, Lance was just a rookie, and Garoppolo, you could keep both, and Garoppolo was the guy to get ready, and they damn near made the Super Bowl. But if these guys got to get paid, you know, the concept, and Shanahan was very open about it at the owners' meeting. It's entirely possible that they could keep him. I just don't know if that's feasible this time around. What are you hearing about Baker Mayfield? That's been very quiet.
I think it's going to stay quiet until after the draft, Rich, because that is the next big data point in all of this as we see who gets quarterbacks in round one or round two. And if you have a team out there like the Falcons that presumably is thinking about someone other than Marcus Mariota, or the Panthers thinking about someone other than Sam Darnold, if they don't get the guy they want, does that become someone who would then be interested in Baker Mayfield? Right now it's only the Seahawks, and who knows, maybe they'll end up drafting somebody in round one or round two to supplant Drew Locke. But there just isn't a lot of buzz right now. And again, Mayfield holds the cards. Neither Mayfield nor Garoppolo have no trade clauses. But when it comes to a starting quarterback, that no trade clause is overrated. Because if I'm interested in a guy to come in and be my starter, to be the face of my team, the most important player there, the guy who shows up early, stays late, does all the things that we need him to do to lead his teammates, he doesn't want to be there. I don't think I'm making that trade. So all Mayfield has to do is kind of dig in his heels. He's getting $18.8 million no matter what this year. His contract is fully guaranteed as his fifth-year option. And you just wait. And the Browns are in a better position than the 49ers to squat on that $18 million and let it play out. But I know the Teddy Bridgewater thing happened 6 years ago, but that is a very, very unlikely outcome. That was such of a fluke injury.
Yeah.
You know, quarterbacks are insulated from contact. The rules favor them during the games. They have the red jerseys on at practice. It was just a non-contact knee blew out for Teddy Bridgewater. So, you know, I just think that at some point you got to move on. And I wonder, there was supposed to be a podcast that drops this week with Baker Mayfield. It would have been his first public comments since his goodbye social media message to Cleveland. I just wonder if he's going to play along with the Browns. You know, is he going to insist on showing up, being part of practice, let me in, let me be here, I'm part of the team, and will they want that distraction if he decides to be very aggressive? It's all to be determined.
The irony, that if he's like Deshaun Watson, I'm gone, I'm not showing up, I'm done, you know, you know, I refuse to go, and or I refuse to come here, and or the other way around. It would be really, really wild. I got Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. Last one for you, and I want to spend a few minutes on this. The old Bermuda Triangle off the coast of Florida. Looks like we've got one inside the state of Florida that you keep posting about, and it's really just a fascinating story of this non-playing season, you know, tying into what was in the Flores suit about, you know, Tom Brady, essentially, even though he was not named, showing up, you know, at a boat, you know, or yacht or whatever the hell it was, for Stephen Ross. Arians saying, you know, he's retiring because he just wanted to pass the torch, even though Brady's coming back, and Brady's role with the Dolphins potentially and what it might have meant before he unretired, and then he unretires and then Arians goes, but it's not because Brady forced it. What is your two cents on whatever the hell is going on with these three Bermuda Triangle data points?
Well,
do you have for me?
And this always makes Buccaneers fans and Dolphins fans very happy when I say this, but Brady was going to Miami, and Sean Payton was going to Miami, and that was the plan. And Brady was going to be introduced as a minority owner of the Dolphins as soon as Super Bowl week. He retired Tuesday, February 1. Hours later, Brian Flores drops his lawsuit, which includes the allegation that he was pressured to meet with a high-profile quarterback who was under contract with another team. He doesn't mention who it was. It was Brady. That was in 2020 when Brady was about to become a free agent after his time with the Patriots ended. That lawsuit short-circuited what the Dolphins were going to do. And it was going to be Brady introduced as a minority owner, pursuit of Sean Payton. And they acknowledged they called the Saints about Payton, and they were told by former Dolphins GM Jeff Ireland, who's now assistant GM with the Saints, don't waste your time. I think there was more to it than that. The Dolphins admit that they considered making Tom Brady a minority owner, but I think it was going to be minority owner, here comes Payton, and at some point in the spring, Brady unretires and goes to the Dolphins. And I say all that now because we need to keep an eye on the possibility of Brady going to the Dolphins next year, because he'll be a free agent. There's a no-tag clause in his contract with the Buccaneers. Unless they extend his contract, they cannot keep him from going wherever he wants to go. So, look, I think that there's a lot of smoke there, which means there are at least flickers of flame. And I look at it, consider this example, Rich.
Yeah.
Last year, Drew Brees retires. Okay, let's say Drew Brees retired for 40 days, came back after his retirement ends. 17 days later, Sean Payton quits. What would Drew Brees have said? I think he would have said, what the hell, man? I'm back and you're leaving. There was none of that vibe with Tom Brady. Wasn't that striking to you? There wasn't even a flinch. There wasn't even a batting of an eye that Bruce Arians is out 17 days after Tom Brady came back. And to me, that said it all.
Yeah, I hear you there. And in some ways, it does not make sense that Arians would just say, you know, I don't want to stick around here anymore, even though Brady is back. Like there's pieces that don't fit. But how would Brady have been able to unretire and go to Miami? Wouldn't there have been compensation go to Tampa that would be required to make that work?
They would have had to compensate the Saints to get Peyton. They would have had to compensate the Buccaneers to get Brady, but the wheels were all moving in that direction. And I don't know whether or not the Buccaneers would have drawn a line in the sand if it came down to it. I know Bruce Arians kind of flippantly said at the combine they would want 5 first-round picks, but I know that the Buccaneers were concerned about Miami. I know the Buccaneers were concerned about San Francisco. And even though no one's going to admit it, they've crafted this narrative that can allow Bruce Arians to walk out the door with his head held high and not feel like he's getting pushed, and that's fine. But the timeline is too weird. The reaction by Brady is too positive. And
What do you mean it's too positive?
Because his head coach is out. He's back. I mean, think if he had retired from the Patriots and he comes back and 17 days later Bill Belichick quits. There's at least going to be a what the hell, man. There's at least going to be something. It was all just like, yeah, this is exactly what we expected. And, Rich, I say that because,
yes.
And I may have told you this before. I know I've said it on PFT Live. I was told within 2 hours after Tom Brady unretired, the next shoe to fall is Arians will be out. And it happened 17 days later. I was told that by someone I trust, and I wasn't able to nail it down and report it, but we hinted at it the next morning on PFT Live. I said, I'll be surprised if both Brady and Arians are with the Buccaneers week one, and 16 days after that is when it happened. So that's why I'm very skeptical, because I mean, people I trust were telling me that it was coming, and other people I trust were telling me that this Miami thing was very, very real.
And I heard that Arians and Brady, you know, had gears grinding, and that, you know, when it all comes down to it, Brady didn't really prefer Arians's approach sometimes, not just about the way he was talking, but just the way he would run things there.
Undisciplined.
That's one way to
retired, showing up, barnstorming in, messing up the work that he and Leftwich were doing. Think about that. Any workplace, if the boss has checked out half or most of the time and then shows up late in the week after you've been busting your ass all week to try to get things in order,
right,
and starts changing things, it's going to irritate you after
a while. But I heard that Brady could have still lived with it, though, when it all comes down to
it. Well, maybe they just ignore him in 2020. I don't know what they would have done, but it's one hell of a coincidence. And maybe there are coincidences, maybe there aren't. But this is one we've never seen before, where one of the great all-time players retires for 40 days, comes back and 17 days later, his head coach is out, and there's no reason for the head coach to walk away other than the narrative that they crafted, which is a very positive, uplifting idea that he wants to hand the baton to Todd Bowles under circumstances where he has a chance to succeed. That's great. I support that. But I also am not willing to believe that it's exactly the way it went down, and that's, you know, that's I know that's not a popular take with Buccaneers fans and Bruce Arians, but that's what I believe.
Well, I thought that my guy Chris Brockman's day was made just because Tiger Woods' favorite non-New England athlete is performing at the Masters, but you just made his day because you've been all over this whole narrative.
It doesn't pass the smell test.
Yeah.
Mike, have a great weekend.
Hey, great talking to you.
Thanks again,
Matt.
Right back at you. That's Mike Florio, everybody. Go get his book, Playmakers. I mean, he keeps talking about this, and I figured, let's dig in. You love it. When was the last time you seriously considered your dream? Because your dream can come true.
Right now, I'm thinking about my dream this very second.
Which is just, you know, a whole haywire conversation about what the hell is going down in the state of Florida. It's time for you and your dream to get back together. It's the it being living the van life in a totally customized Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. Because we're talking about a Mercedes-Benz van, which means you can expect innovative safety features. Crosswind assist, blind spot assist. You can expect amazing performance and reliability with an MBUX voice command system, a 5-star dealer network, an available gas engine. You could do whatever you darn well please with your time if you have it. You could go travel the country. You could go see family. You could go see friends. You could go stare at the ocean. You could start your own business. It runs like a dream. So what do you say? Head to the Mercedes-Benz van dealership and get that Sprinter. Tell them your dream sent you. TJ Jefferson's big-ass grab bag to take us to the weekend. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Callaway Rogue ST driver, the only one to build to completely bomb it, folks. I got to tell you, it's been speed tuned to Callaway's fastest, most stable driver ever. Every Rogue ST is engineered with a new tungsten speed cartridge, gives you more speed on off-center hits and provides more forgiveness thanks to MOI. It's just the beginning because Callaway has engineered a Rogue ST for every single player. There's the Max, the Max D, the Max LS, the Rogue ST Triple Diamond LS. That's the low spin compact driver that the tour players just absolutely love. And you'll see it out there. You'll see it out there. Danny Willett, as of this conversation, he's a Callaway player. He's a Team Callaway guy. He is currently sharing a lead at the Masters. Yes. And he's got lots left to go today. So he can have that lead going into the weekend. Callaway has thought through every single aspect of speed. So all you've got to do is go rogue. Find your Rogue ST driver at callawaygolf.com/go rogue. TJ, sorry to just throw it on you, but you got your glasses on.
I stay ready.
Well, I know. It's a tight squeeze. TJ Jefferson's top five, his big ass grab bag.
What in the world is in that bag? What you got in that bag?
All right, kaboom. Guess you stepped in the room like we always do at this time. I'm going to make this one quick, guys. Just want to, you know, kind of recap a little WrestleMania weekend for you. First and foremost, I want to thank everybody over at Peacock for inviting me to the Yellowstone suite. What they did, Rich, is they took a suite. They kind of tricked it out, made it look like Montana. It looked like you were in a bunkhouse, and it was great, man. They had, you know, the drinks were flowing, had a little whiskey, had some beer, had some finger foods. You know, they had all the little condiments, had Dallas Cowboy stars on top of them. And everyone in attendance is getting cowboy boots from Wild Bill's Western Wear.
Damn.
I'm telling you, it was a setup, man. It was great. And I had to stunt real quick, Rich. I'm just going to tell you this. I was live streaming this. Somebody was on the comments making comments and went, oh, you're way up in the nosebleed section. And I took offense. I had to stop him real quick and say, nah, baby, I'm in a suite. Don't play me like that.
Nice.
So anyway, I had to do that. But shout out to everybody.
It's a big stadium. It's huge.
Yeah,
man.
It's huge. So shout out to everybody at Peacock. And thank you so much for having me. Also, shout out to my man, Chuck Kingsbury from WWE for looking out. It was a great time. All right, now let's get to this top five real quick. I dug in the big-ass grab bag. Going to give you my five favorite things. Coming at number five, I was never a fan of Johnny Knoxville and Jackass. That just wasn't my jam back in the day. But Johnny Knoxville had a match against Sami Zayn, and it delivered. If you were a fan of Jackass and everything that you liked was in this, that big hand that they would slap people with, we had mouse traps, we had tasers, stun guns, all the Jackass crew came out. I always thought that Hulk Hogan Slim and Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3 was the most impressive feat ever. No. Wee Man got in the ring and slammed Sami Zayn. It was amazing, and it was just a good time, and it was a good night, and these guys came through. I can't front. I wasn't expecting much, and they delivered. Coming at number four, Pat McAfee. He had two matches. He beat Austin Theory, which is a big deal for Pat because Austin Theory is a star of the future. And then there were rumors, there were rumblings that Mr. McMahon would get back in the ring. I didn't believe it until it happened. He had a little impromptu match with Vince McMahon. It was fun. It was sloppy. It was fun, whatever. Pat lost that one, so we went 1-1, and then Stone Cold came out.
Like, what do you think? I mean, the boss in there? Yeah. But Pat killed it, man.
Yeah, He did a great jump onto the ropes. Yeah,
that was crazy.
Like I said, this is his third match. He had two in NXT. Check him out. Great job by Pat.
What a dream for him to be out there with Stone Cold, too.
Absolutely.
I'm sure. All right, what else you got?
Coming in at number three, we had the man Becky Lynch coming in last week. If you want to argue and say her and Bianca Belair had the best match of the weekend, I won't argue with you. These two women, they did their thing. It was a great match. A lot of psychology involved, a lot of throwback to their previous match. Bianca Belair, for the second year in a row, walks out as champion. She's a star, man, and it's amazing to see. Coming in at number two, friend of the show, Cody Rhodes, made his return. And I just wanted to share this with you, Rich. 6 years ago, WWE didn't think Cody Rhodes was a star. So instead of him staying there, what he did is he left. He went on his own to prove them wrong. And he went from wrestling in front of 12,000 people every Monday and Friday to I saw him with 150 people in an armory in Reseda wrestle. Okay, he did that. He went all over this country. He went all over the world. He helped build a competitor just to prove to them that he was main event worthy. And then he had his comeback, and it was amazing. That place went nuts. It's great to see him back. He proved them wrong, and he is a star. And coming in at number one, 19 years after he lost to The Rock in WrestleMania, Stone Cold Steve Austin made his return. It was what we all wanted to see. We didn't want to see a wrestling match. We wanted to see a fight. Stone Cold still kicks ass, and he still drinks beer. He does them better than anybody on the planet. And 80,000 people lost their mind over two nights when that glass shattered and he came out. It was just a great moment. And like I said yesterday, for us to have that for free in this studio a few weeks ago, it was impressive and amazing. And man, I had a great time this weekend at WrestleMania. And if you were there, hit us up in our YouTube comments. Let me know what you thought.
There you go. And be positive, because TJ really doesn't want to hear from you otherwise.
He's going to read all of them.
While we're being honest, they didn't invite you to the suite. I invited you on our behalf to the suite, and they said okay.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I don't know why you need to say that.
No.
We were having a feel-good moment. I was feeling good about myself. I was hyping them up. And then what you did is you didn't make me look bad. I think you made them look bad.
I invited ourselves for us.
I'm just saying, well, regardless, thank you then, because it was awesome.
If not us, who, Rich?
I watched the first WrestleMania, and to be there at 38, great.
I want to thank today's guests, Beef Jerky, Cam Juergens, Mike Florio, Giancarlo Esposito, and John Harbaugh. Have a great weekend, everybody.